Don't move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello, and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we are here to do Chapter 13, Nicholas Flamel. As with every episode, we are going to start with the chapter summary, and it is Joe's turn to do that.
So it will be perfect, as usual.
Yep, buckle up.
Okay, so in this chapter, Harry finds out that the next Quidditch game he's playing will be refereed by Snape, and if they win the Quidditch game, they'll be ahead of Slytherin. So they know Snape isn't going to treat them fairly.
Ahead of Slytherin in the House Cup.
In the House Cup points, yeah. Yes. As Harry is telling Ron and Hermione about this, they start worrying for Harry's life because they think Snape is going to kill him.
Rational.
Yes. Neville stumbles into the common room and Harry feels bad for him because he was just jinxed by Malfoy and gives him his very last chocolate frog card.
Yes.
So the chocolate frog card that he gives to Neville is Dumbledore. And he reads it again to realize that Nicholas Flamel is mentioned. And Hermione very quickly finds him in one of the books she had taken out and reads them about the Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone, depending on which version you're reading. Then they play the Quidditch game and Harry wins in 5 minutes. And right after the game, he sees Snape sneaking out of the Hogwarts castle and he follows him on his broom and hovers in the trees to listen to Snape and Quirrell have a secret meeting.
Yes.
Not too bad.
It's okay.
Fine.
Once I edit it, it'll be a lot better.
Excuse me.
So I want to start with when they discover that Snape will be refereeing the Quidditch match. Because as you said, Ron and Hermione start to fear that Snape will attempt to kill Harry at a school-sanctioned event, which in itself is laughable. But I do have to question why Snape is refereeing this match. It is never really explained, and I'm not sure he's trained or qualified or even knows the rules of Quidditch.
Well, he's basically the coach of the Slytherin team. There's not like an official coach. It's not like
it really seems like they're just like, well, here's the captain. You're left on your own.
I guess. But, you know, McGonagall is very involved in the Gryffindor team, but you never see her.
Is she? She recruits Harry, but other than that,
she's invested in the very least.
Sure, yeah, but that doesn't qualify her to coach the match.
And she's there with the announcer as the game is going on.
I kind of see that more as a deputy headmistress responsibility than a house head responsibility.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it just seems like they needed someone. I don't know.
But where's Madame Hooch?
I don't know where she is today, but she clearly couldn't make it.
And just, I mean, this is a problem with book versus movie that I'll always picture Alan Rickman as Snape. Mm-hmm. And I'm picturing Alan Rickman circa, you know, 2001 when this movie came out. Not Alan Rickman circa, well, 98 is when Rowling wrote this. And she did picture Alan Rickman as Snape, but he's too old. Like, book Snape is in his 30s at this point. I'm picturing, you know, 50-year-old Alan Rickman flying around on a broom, and it doesn't work for me.
No, especially because even though that's not how it works, I am picturing him in the black and white striped jersey shirt.
Oh, just wearing Madame Hooch's... Oh, no, wearing like a referee.
Like a regular referee.
I never put together that Madame Hooch's cape is black and white striped because that's how referees dress. I thought she just had a dope cape.
She does, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a weird little... I know it's just... Okay, plot, but why is Snape refereeing?
Well, that's exactly the point. They say he's never done it before, so why do it now? Which is why the three of them are afraid for Harry's life.
Sure. Yeah.
Last time, they're pretty sure that Snape was trying to kill him.
I like that they're only soothed later on by the fact that Dumbledore is at the match It's like, well, if Dumbledore isn't there, all bets are off. Snape will just commit murder in front of, you know, the entire school and all the teachers.
Yeah, of course. But Dumbledore will keep them in line.
As if, like, if, say, Snape did murder Harry at the Quidditch match and, like, McGonagall turned around and was like, Albus, something horrible has happened. Dumbledore would be like, well, I didn't see it myself, so I don't believe it.
Well, that's not what
they're afraid of. I guess the implication is that, like, Dumbledore could stop.
Yeah, Snape. Dumbledore but could stop anything.
It's very silly.
Lord Voldemort is afraid of Dumbledore. Of course, Snape is afraid of Dumbledore.
I guess, yeah, that's fine. Oh, there's also a really good line at one point. I only took half of it, but it says, Snape's sudden sinister desire to be a Quidditch referee. It's very good.
Well, something I focused on in the very beginning was how Harry had been having nightmares, mm-hmm. Which were the resurgence of that first memory of his parents being killed in front of him.
The screaming and the green light.
Yeah, but now they're more clear. Now he has faces to put to them, mm-hmm. and he's having a lot of nightmares about it.
Yes, and it's implied that this is inspired by his recent experience with the mirror.
Exactly, yes. And it talks about him going all in on Quidditch practice in order to forget about it. He's like, when I'm exhausted from training all mm-hmm. day, I have less nightmares, so this is better. Which, like, a lot of people will have a traumatic experience and dive right into their work, focus on anything just to get away from it.
It's interesting, and it's not the first or the last time that we'll see Harry's nightmares.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, they are constant throughout the series.
Yeah.
Harry is not, he doesn't sleep well. And the few times he does, it has to be explicitly written. Every other time you can assume he's having a nightmare.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure one of the books literally opens with Harry sleeping, like his face pressed against the window of the Dursleys' house. I want to say it's Half-Blood Prince, but I don't feel confident in it.
I don't remember. We'll talk about it when we get there.
Yeah. In 8,000 years. When Harry comes in to deliver this news about Snape being the referee, he sees Ron and Hermione playing chess as well. And there's a very good line in here as well. It says, chess was the only thing Hermione ever lost at, something Harry and Ron thought was very good for her. And I left a note there that said, Hermione is well adjusted and normal.
Well, it might just be saying, like, you know, she might be full of herself because of constantly being right about everything.
She might hate losing at games.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I don't know what you're talking about. She's well adjusted and normal. I don't know how I feel about the idea that Hermione is bad at chess, though.
I think that it might just be she's busy studying. She's doing all these things. She's never spent time playing chess, especially wizard chess. I think the rules are different.
No, it's a very, like, logic and focus game, a game where you have to plan ahead and think about the consequences of your moves and anticipate your opponent's moves. And I don't know, that seems to me like something Hermione would be good at, but that also might be just Ron is really good at chess.
So yeah, Ron has been playing for a very long time.
Yeah, but I did like that little detail about Hermione. When Harry does tell Ron and Hermione about Snape being the referee and they jump to, oh, he's going to kill you. Ron and Hermione try to make all these suggestions about how Harry can get out of the Quidditch match. And Hermione's like, oh, say you're sick, you know, don't play, that kind of thing. She's like, pretend you broke your leg.
And Ron says, actually break your leg. It'll be better, I promise.
Which is so good because, first of all, I mean, this is established kind of later on that bones can be mended in like a minute. So that really wouldn't get Harry out of anything. And you think Ron would know that, having siblings that I'm sure would go to any length to get out of an undesirable task. But also, just Ron is so ride or die with Harry, you know? Always just like right to the extreme.
If you're gonna do it, you're gonna do it right.
Yeah. I very much appreciated that.
Yeah, that was a pretty good line.
And then Neville comes limping in. Or not even limping, hopping in. Which is horrible because they say that Harry's like, well, Neville must have hopped all the way up to Gryffindor Tower, which is on the 7th floor.
And nobody helped him.
Nobody helped this poor kid.
And to top that off, he comes in. Everyone fell over laughing except for Hermione, who leapt up and performed the counter curse.
Hermione is a hall monitor.
Like, Hermione starts off, like, her first appearance is looking for Neville's toad. Hermione's just like,
she's the only one looking out for this kid.
Like, I don't know if she really cares or she just feels this weird responsibility for everyone.
I think,
like, is she a mom or does she?
I think Hermione cares about Neville just as a friend and she knows the counter curse.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's Hermione's intolerance for rule breaking, because when Ron and Harry tell her about the Mirror of Erised and going into the restricted section, she's like, how dare you go out at night and not even learn anything, like, not even find anything about Nicholas Flamel. So I think that part of it is Hermione just genuinely being a kind person who cares about Neville, and part of it is her being like, Malfoy broke the rules, mm-hmm. and I need to fix it.
And also, potentially, she knows the counter curse, and she wants to show it off.
Yeah, maybe. I never want to think badly of Hermione, but sometimes we have to consider what her intentions might actually be.
Nobody's perfect.
Harry does give Neville a nice little pep talk. Like, he gives Neville the chocolate frog, which is very kind of him, especially because it is his last. But then he says, you're worth 12 of Malfoy. The Sorting Hat chose you for Gryffindor, didn't it? And where's Malfoy? In stinking Slytherin. Which, I don't love the very black and white perception of the houses that Rowling kind of continues through the whole series. Like, oh, Slytherin is horrible and you're bad for being in it. But it is still really nice of Harry to affirm that Neville is brave and worthwhile.
Yeah, that's the other thing. We were just complimenting Hermione and she goes straight to, like, scolding him.
I mean,
you should have told on him. You know, there's no reason you should let him walk all over you. Don't lay down and take it.
I think that is good advice, though. I mean, maybe not good advice, because she's kind of encouraging Neville to fight back. She does start it with, like, oh, tell on him, like, tell McGonagall. But yeah, I think it is still good advice, because she's saying, like, you're able to fight back. You have that courage inside of you. You just need to manifest it.
Well, that's not how he takes it at all. Because he's just like, you know, you don't have to tell me I'm not brave either.
Yeah. Well, he's just been bullied. He's very sad. But Harry's little speech is very sweet.
It is.
Yeah.
And then we do see that come up later in, I don't know if I love the way he used it, like, as Malfoy is mocking him in the stands of the Quidditch game.
Malfoy is a little pissant at the Quidditch match. I hate him. He goes back to his little, like, well, the Weasleys are poor. And he doesn't
have a lot of material.
He's intolerable in this chapter.
Harry has no parents.
Yeah.
The Weasleys are poor. And Neville has no brains.
It's
which, like,
awful.
What's the ground for that? We never hear about Neville.
Doesn't he get in trouble with Snape for messing up a potion?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. It's been a while. Yeah, I think that there's implied to be a foundation in that Neville isn't good at school. It's still mean.
So Harry gives Neville the chocolate frog, gives him his nice little pep talk, and Neville, it looks like he might cry a bit, and he goes off to bed. Just like, finally someone's nice to him as he hopped up 7 flights of stairs. But that chocolate frog, as I already said in the summary, had Dumbledore's card in it, and we learn about Nicholas Flamel.
Yes. And I have a lot of notes about Nicholas Flamel, so again, buckle up. So my dive into the many details of Nicholas Flamel started with Galadriel, who we haven't mentioned in a very long time, who is the author of The Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, my favorite book of all time.
Not Harry Potter itself?
Yes, other than Harry Potter. And I did fact check it this time because we were burned by Galadriel a few episodes ago. But according to her, Nicholas and his wife, Perrinil Flamel, are real people, or were real people, who supposedly worked on a Philosopher's Stone and Elixir of Life in the 14th century. And it's a bit of alternate history that Rowling then puts them into the Harry Potter series and, of course, says, like, oh, well, he actually discovered the Philosopher's Stone. Obviously,
well, so there's fiction writing about him discovering the Philosopher's Stone outside of Harry Potter.
Yes.
But he actually was just a scribe.
Yes, he was a scrivener and a philanthropist. Scrivener, scribe, it's basically the same thing. So I have some details about who they actually were and then who they were kind of fictionalized to be.
Mm-hmm.
So as I said, he was a scrivener. They were French. They lived in Paris in the 14th century. There's no evidence really of them dabbling in alchemy at all. And it's completely an invention of the 17th century. So in 1612, a book was published in French called The Book of Hieroglyphic Figures. Obviously, that's the translated title. It was translated into English and published in London in 1624. And it's a fictional account said to be from Nicolas Flamel's perspective of him discovering this book and spending 21 years decoding it and figuring out the secret to the elixir of life and the philosopher's stone. The story wasn't questioned, at least that we have record of, up until 150 years later in 17, I think it was 62, but a lot of people were like, no, it's true. I know it's true. I've seen him. I've met him. There are other fictional stories written by him. So really just kind of a group flip out over this.
I mean, at that point in time, there's no reason not to believe it. Hey, sure, it's on paper.
Yeah, they didn't know any better. And
print never lies.
Of course. Yeah. No, you can't print lies. Why would you print something that's untrue?
Yeah.
And actually, the text of this book is available online, and I read a little bit of it. I didn't read the whole thing, and the website it's on has a disclaimer like, this is obviously not true, even though it's purporting itself to be. And they're like, maybe if they didn't go to such effort to mention like 18 times, like, this is true, this is my real life, this is the real Nicolas Flamel, it would have been easier to believe. So us, from our informed perspective about fake news and inaccurate publishing, it's easy to see, but obviously it wasn't back then. But since then, Flamel has just become kind of a, not folk character of European history, but he's known. Mm-hmm. He was referenced in journals by Sir Isaac Newton. He was referenced by Victor Hugo in Hunchback of Notre Dame. I don't know the context because I can barely sit through the Disney movie, let alone the book.
Disney movie is great.
I don't like it. More modernly, he's been mentioned in The Da Vinci Code, As Above, So Below, which is a horror movie that I read the plot synopsis of on Wikipedia. Full Metal Alchemist, which is an anime. And there's a fantasy book series about
him. Yes, by Michael Scott. Actually just started reading it. My uncle recommended to me.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't realize that. Yeah, I haven't heard anything any which way about it. There are roads in Paris named after Nicolas and Paranel. And one of their homes is still standing today and is the oldest building in the city of Paris.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like a known thing. I really didn't realize this up until today. Although I do have to nitpick a little tiny bit and say that Rowling did not do her homework here. The real Flamel, according to Wikipedia, which we know never lies and is always accurate, was born in 1340, and he would have only been 651 in 1991, not 665, as the book that they have. Although we don't really know when that book that Hermione has was published, but either way, it's wrong.
I think record keeping might have been a little off back in those years.
Also, Rowling didn't have Wikipedia in 1991. I did want to get into, so I read all of this and knowing obviously that at 665, Flamel must have discovered the Philosopher's Stone a long time ago. For some reason, I had it in my head that he and Dumbledore discovered it together.
Oh, no.
No, no, which wouldn't be possible at all. So I don't know why I realized that. But I was sitting there thinking, like, so what kind of work on alchemy did Dumbledore and Flamel do together? Like, what's the nature of their relationship? What did they discover together? Apparently, they get into that in the new Fantastic Beasts movie, and I don't want anything to do with that. So we're just going to stop the Flamel talk there.
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
That makes one of us.
Okay.
But yeah, I like that Rowling is creating this magical world by synthesizing real history and fictional history and folk tales, because like Merlin is a real person in the Harry Potter universe, like a real person who existed, and Flamel is a real person in history who has been turned into something in sort of mythology. And yeah, I like that she's bringing together all of those things to make it a little more grounded.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, she's not coming up with the entire fiction on her own, but she is pulling pieces from different places.
Yeah.
And that's evident throughout the series.
Yeah, yeah.
We won't go into specifics yet, but we'll point it out as we come across them.
Yeah. To me, it's very similar, and I know very little about the Lord of the Rings books. I like the movies a lot, and I keep trying to read the books. But to me, it's very similar in that Tolkien's mission was to establish one English kind of folk tale.
Yeah, he was trying to invent his own, like, lore of ancient England.
Yes, yeah. And in doing that, he did synthesize all these different sources. He didn't, as far as I know, pull historical figures like Rowling is. And this is, to my memory, one of the few times that she does actually do it. But yeah, to me, it's a similar idea of creating your lore and grounding it in already known things and borrowing things to make it a little more familiar to the reader, and even just adding that fun trivia moment of like, hey, I've heard about that before, and adding allusions, which authors do for, you know, all kinds of reasons. Allusions with an A, not an I.
Yeah. Yes.
But that's my fun Nicholas Flamel stuff.
Yeah, the book's pretty good so far. I'm like 4 pages in. I have I have very little time on my hands.
That's not true, but
well, I have a short attention span.
That's more true.
Reading.
That's closer to the truth. And so they go to the Quidditch match. As Joe said, that Harry catches the Snitch in like 5 minutes. We hear very little about the actual Quidditch match, which is partly because it's so short.
It is very short. Immediately it starts, and Malfoy starts picking on. He shows up and pokes Ron in the back of the head just to, like, establish his presence.
He's awful.
Goes straight to making fun of the Weasleys, Harry, and Neville. And then we get a nice little fist fight.
Yes. Yeah, they do fight. But the worst thing, in my opinion, maybe not the worst thing that he says, but Harry goes into a dive to catch the Snitch, and Malfoy is like, oh, you're in luck, Weasley. He spotted some money on the ground for you. Ugh. Ugh. He's awful.
Well, so as Malfoy starts making fun of Neville, Neville turns around and says, I'm worth 12 of you, Malfoy, which is very sweet. He took what Harry said to heart. But, like, imagine someone actually trying to stand up for themselves with that. Like, it sounds very sad.
Okay, but they're 11.
I get that. But just, you know, from Malfoy and Crabbe and Goyle's perspective, they do laugh immediately. That's not, they don't take offense to that at all. And I know it's true. I know Neville is absolutely worth 12 of Malfoy.
Absolutely.
But just, I don't know.
I think it's sweet. I think, to me, that indicates that what Harry said really did.
Yeah, he took it to heart. And it helped him, but
it helped. I think it helped him, you know, get that courage to say, no, I am worth something. I'm worth more than you. You know, sort of evidencing the build of bravery that we see in Neville throughout this book and throughout the series. That, you know, it might take, you know, a little help from his friends, but that Neville is a brave character. And we see that coming out of him as he not gets older and matures, but as time goes on.
Well, we see it come out right now as he goes. Ron starts wrestling with Malfoy, and then Neville decides to help out by fighting both Crabbe and Goyle himself.
Yeah, it's so sweet. Oh, I love Neville.
But what Ron and Hermione were supposed to be doing that whole time, which Hermione stayed true to herself, true to her goal, was keeping an eye on Harry and Snape, being ready to use the leg lock curse on him if he tried anything.
Yeah, as if that would stop Snape from murdering Harry.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you close his legs together and he can't move, maybe he'll just fall to the ground.
Yep. Drop his wand and it's over.
Yeah. So the game ends. Hermione and Pavarti get to celebrate because Ron is still fighting. Harry comes to the ground and Dumbledore congratulates him by saying, nice to see you haven't been brooding about that mirror. Been keeping busy. Excellent. It was interesting. A little, like, it's supportive, but saying, like, oh, good, you're keeping busy. You're getting away from, you know, your problems. It was just that recurring thing of stay busy to avoid your trouble.
Yeah, to distract yourself from grief and obsession and fixation. Yeah, it is very affirming of him. It is. I was a little confused at how quickly he got onto the Quidditch pitch, but...
Well, it was saying, like, all of Gryffindor was pouring on.
Oh, okay.
So...
I thought maybe he, like, teleported or something.
I'm sure he could.
Yeah, he's Dumbledore. I don't have any more notes, so...
For the rest of the chapter?
Yeah, it's hard to talk about the thing in the Forbidden Forest, because it is a red herring, and, yeah, knowing what happens at the end of the book makes it difficult to give it anything.
Well, look at it from the perspective of Harry. So, Harry goes, puts his broom away after the match. He's completely alone. He leans against the broom shed and sees a cloaked Snape running quickly towards the Forbidden Forest. And he decides to get up onto his broom and follow him there.
I mean, that's not insane. He's been told that the Forbidden Forest is off limits for students, but off limits, dangerous, and he's already suspecting Snape of wanting to murder him. So it's not unreasonable, I don't think, for him to go and follow him.
Okay. It was interesting that he did choose, okay, I'm going to fly after him.
Well, yeah, he's not going to go into the, like, walk into the forest. And Snape has, he like sees it across the grounds. He sees Snape.
Yes,
running.
Snape has a very big lead at
this
moment.
Yeah, yeah. So the broom is a smart decision, and it enables him to like hide in the trees and listen.
Which I thought was interesting. I never thought of just like, oh yeah, just hide from a treetop and listen.
Yeah. Quiet.
Like perch like a bird.
Yeah. I would probably drop my broom and like give away where it was.
And he shows his flying skills by landing silently on a branch.
Yeah.
But anyway, so now that we finally learned about the Sorcerer's Stone, or Philosopher's Stone,
Snape
says it. Students aren't supposed to know about the Sorcerer's Stone after all.
Yeah. Seems like a weird conversation to be having. Like, what is the context of that? Because Harry is, first of all, dropping in on it, already started, and he doesn't get certain parts.
Yeah, you hear just like little bits of sentences cut off. I don't know if it's just like that whisper gets slightly loud enough and then goes back down again.
Yeah, I wonder at the actual context of that sentence.
Especially when he says hocus pocus. What was it? Yeah, so Harry gets distracted by an owl and then he hears Snape say, "You're a little bit of hocus pocus. I'm waiting." I can't imagine what that was supposed to be about.
I can think of two things, which I will tell you and then cut out because they're spoilers.
Well, they do talk to, well, Harry does talk to Hermione and Ron about it, and Hermione thinks, oh, well, there's probably a bunch of traps in there.
Yeah.
And that hocus pocus might be a trap that Quirrell had set up.
Right. Right. Yeah, totally. So we end with that little mystery. The mystery continues.
Yeah, what was happening with the meeting? What is that hocus pocus?
I mean, not why is Snape trying to steal the stone? Because when they figure out what the Philosopher's Stone is and that it's what's being hidden and what it does, Harry and Ron are like, oh, well, anyone would want that. You know, I can think of a million things I'd buy with unlimited money. But, you know, whether Snape will be successful, whether anyone will stop him, or whether it'll be down to Harry and company.
Absolutely. And they do end the chapter thinking that Quirrell is the only one standing in Snape's way. So it ended with two great lines from Hermione and then Ron. So you mean the stone's only safe as long as Quirrell stands up to Snape? Said Hermione in alarm. It'll be gone by next Tuesday, said Ron.
I love Ron. Yeah, so that's the chapter. And that brings us to Spell of the Week.
And I actually had an easy time finding a spell because...
For once.
Yeah, because not only was a spell used, but there's information about that spell.
Yeah, it's like directly mentioned too. It's not just like, oh, the leg locker curse. We get the incantation.
We get exactly what it does. So the spell, the leg locker curse, the incantation is locomotor mortis. And it basically just pulls the legs together and locks them in place.
Yes. Are you going to talk about the Latin etymology of this?
Well, locomoto.
Locomoto, like a train.
Essentially, yeah. Locomotor is of or relating to locomotion. And Latin mortis means death. So it's the death of motion.
Yes.
You know, it's just stopping you in your tracks.
Yeah.
Which in theory, is a good way to stop Snape from murdering Harry. This curse can be found in the book Curses and Counter Curses by Vindictus Viridian.
It's a good name.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And of course, Hermione does use the counter curse to undo Draco's curse on Neville.
Yes. So we know there is a counter curse. I don't think we know what exactly it is, though.
Yeah, we don't know the incantation of it. Other than that, it's not really used too often in the books. It is used quite a few times in different video games.
Yes. Yes. Before we started, Joe was like, I think this is the only time the spell has been used. Little did he know, I have vivid memory of this. Maybe you remember the scene, but not the spell being used. But in the PlayStation 2 version of Chamber of Secrets, which is where I'm most familiar with it from, the PlayStation 2 version of Chamber of Secrets uses this spell liberally when you sneak out at night. That's a big mechanic of the game, is like the stealth sections and dodging the prefix and head boys and teachers when you do sneak out. And if they catch you, I swear it is some of the scariest use of sound effects in a video game, to the point where I kind of want to edit it in to the episode here. There's this like terrifying musical cue when they spot you. And then they're like, hey, you!
Hey, you!
And then if they get close enough to you, they shout in this savage voice, locomoto mortis!
Locomoto mortis!
And freeze you. And it's just, it's terrifying. It is so scary. And me and my siblings, having played this game a lot as children, would scream this at each other and pretend to have our legs bound.
And I might be remembering this wrong, but I feel like in that video game, when it was shot at you, it looked like, I'm trying to remember what that thing is called.
Like a pink or purple, almost like a dumbbell. It has, you know, like two circles at the end and then a line connecting them.
It was there's like an Australian, like
boomerang.
No, it's not a boomerang.
Okay, well, it does shoot towards you. It spins towards you and freezes Harry's legs, and his arms go crazy trying to balance. And you lose house points and you have to go back to the beginning of the level.
Bolas. Bolas is the name of the thing I was thinking of.
Okay.
It's balls on strings. You kind of spin it around and wrap up.
You throw it and it wraps.
You throw it and it wraps stuff up. And that's kind of what it looked like.
That's probably what
the animation
of. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I think you said it was in other games as well.
Yes, it shows up in the Harry Potter and Philosopher's Stone video game.
Which one?
It does not specify.
Okay.
Let's see.
It's definitely not in the PC version because I've played that one.
It's listing all of them.
Okay. It's not in the PC version.
Okay.
At least that I remember.
So it shows up in the Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets video game.
Mm-hmm.
The Goblet of Fire.
I haven't played that one.
Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince, and both Lego Harry Potter sets.
Nice. We haven't unlocked it yet, I don't think.
We haven't played the game in so long.
Yeah.
So.
There is also a deleted scene in the movie. I don't remember if it's deleted or if it's in the extended version.
No, it is a deleted scene.
Okay. There's a deleted scene of Neville hopping into the Great Hall after having been jinxed.
Yes, and Seamus offers to help him, and Neville turns him down, saying that he doesn't want his knees to set on fire.
Yep. Fair. Yeah. So that is the Lycklocker curse and our episode. There are a lot of ways that we would love to interact with you, the listener. We would love if you sent us emails sharing us some things we might have missed, some things we might have got wrong, or just your experiences with the Harry Potter series. You can send us these emails to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. You can send it directly to that address or send it through the website if that's easier for you for whatever reason. You can visit our website, podtrificustotalis.com, where you can view detailed show notes. And I do source all of my information there, which I'm sure is very helpful for the nerds that want to fact check me.
It's a lot of the Harry Potter wiki.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I try to go to the actual source. You know, like if there's an interview that they talk about on the wiki, I'll go to the actual interview and read it there, because that's how you do good research.
If you say so. You are the English teacher.
That's true. And you can listen to episodes and subscribe, of course, via the website. Obviously, you can subscribe to us on any major podcast services. If there's one that we're not on that you would like to listen to us on, you can email us about that, too, and I'll get us on there. I think I was pretty thorough, though. And then you can, interact with us on social media. We have a Twitter account at Podtrificus. Just Podtrificus, because Twitter limits the number of characters that you can use in your Twitter handle. We have a Facebook page. We have a Tumblr page. We got the works. YouTube, if you want to listen to a podcast on YouTube, although that kind of defeats the purpose.
There's no video. It's just...
Yeah, it's just a picture of the cover. And we're probably not ever going to do a video because it's usually us in our pajamas.
I've got some pretty sweet pajamas, though.
We'll wear our matching ones. So we're on all of the, social media sites, and we like to hear from people. So, please talk to us. We're very lonely. We spend too much time together, so we need other people to come and talk to us. And then the best thing you can do is share the podcast with a friend if you like it and you think somebody else who would like it. That would be very, very kind and helpful of you. And you can join us next time for episode 14. Jeez, we're almost to the end. 17 chapters.
Wow.
A lot's going to happen in the last three chapters.
Yeah, they really cram it all together. Yeah.
It takes six chapters for Harry to get to the school, and then things go down pretty quick.
Yeah, so the next chapter 14, is Norbert the Norwegian Ridgeback.